Welcome to the Otherworlds GG Community Cast. This is episode number 37. I am Table for Two, aka Hunter, and I'm joined today by Mellified and Alien Pickle. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, this is Mellified, aka Adrian. I am doing great. Excited to be talking with you both today.
Jim, how are you doing, bud?
I kind of feel like a microtransaction. You know, it's like you could be without me, but, you know, it's nice to have.
You've been playing a lot of War Thunder lately, yeah?
Yeah, a little bit.
How's that going?
I'm maximizing my premium time. It's going about 0.5 kill to death ratio. Not really great. Especially in the tanks.
Yeah, the tank.
Trying
the tank...
to grind up the. Not good.
No, I was gonna say the tank sim scene has been a little weird. I wouldn't even call it sim, but like the tank battle games, you know, from like Armored Warfare to War Thunder to obviously World of Tanks. It's a very interesting genre of games. Today, though, we're going to talk about gaming services, not necessarily games as a service, but gaming services, kind of like your Google Stadias, your Amazon Lunas, to even stuff that Microsoft is doing with its xCloud, and I guess NVIDIA also has their GeForce Now experience, and, you know, Sony has their their PS Plus or PS Now? I can never remember which
PS
one was
Now.
That. Yeah,
is the like download or stream games service. PS Now.
Yeah, and then they have PS, which is they find it irresistible.
Yeah. So these services are definitely interesting, and I maybe we should go ahead and also include in that mix the
GeForce Now.
No, I just said GeForce Now, but Steam Link.
Oh yes, okay.
You know, they've got their like they also have the Play With Me feature functionality, right? Or you can like bring a friend, you can do the remote stream like play. The Play Together is what they call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but they didn't say play with yourself as the other option, which is a missed opportunity.
Oh my god. Well, that is funny though. But here's the here's like the thing that we kind of I kind of wanted us to talk about today is, you know, Xbox just now got, you know, they've got their if you have Game Pass Ultimate, right? Like you can stream gameplay from the cloud to your mobile device or to a web browser. Right. Or you can even do it to the app now on the PC. You can stream, you know, the gameplay for stuff from the cloud to your PC. And now they've finally added that back in the functionality, which they had with the Xbox One X. You could stream the console to your PC. And they were going to have that feature for the series. And then it kind of like wasn't there. And now they've finally brought all that stuff together, and so now I can stream my console, my One X that I have, and I'm assuming, Mellified, it works with your Series X as well. You can stream to the PC or probably to your mobile device, your console, the direct console, and they've even got the functionality to where it'll work over the internet too. I know Sony's kind of had that technology for a little while. They've been able to like let you do that, especially with the PS Vita. You could stream to the PS Vita. But what I kind of want to get into on this, and that I find very interesting, is the differences in some of these platforms and how we think about games, because games are starting to get to a very interesting place where, and this is pretty common knowledge out there, so I don't have an issue with talking about this, but like, you could go to archive.org right now, right? And you could look up retro games. Let's say, I'm even going to throw it out there, Mario Brothers, right? And you could play Mario Brothers through your browser off of archive.org. Like, right there in the browser. Which is crazy to me that that's possible. And there's even, like, DOS games you can do that now with, too. There's, like, a DOS emulator that you can have embedded right into your browser, and you can play it through Chrome or whatever. Which, again, is just crazy to me. And so much so that recently there's a beta program for the game EVE Online called EVE Anywhere, and you can play EVE Online through a web browser. I do not understand that. But part of me is also thinking it's almost no different than what these other game streaming services, like being able to remote play my games through, like, you know, xCloud, you know, for example, or from Google's, or not Google, but NVIDIA's GeForce Now service, right, which has been around for quite a while. And there was that one service many years ago that was trying to get this off the ground and couldn't quite get there. I keep forgetting the name of it, though, but I was part of the beta program for that, like, many years ago. I mean, we're talking, I don't know, late 2000s, somewhere in there. So definitely over a decade ago, they were trying to do the service, but, like, they're just the broadband capabilities in the U.S. just could not afford it that well. But even now, though, like, I can sit, you know, or lay in bed and stream to my phone and play with touch controls. In our last episode, in our last news episode, we talked about, you know, there's over 50 games from Microsoft that have touch control capability through their xCloud streaming service, which is genius for one thing, but also remarkable at how well they're trying to make their stuff compatible. Microsoft also being the one that have the support for the controller for people with different types of disabilities that allows people with different disabilities to also enjoy video games.
The accessibility controller.
Yeah, the accessibility controller, which is awesome. And from what I understand, they're pretty much manufacturing that at a loss, but they don't care because they want to be able to include everybody in on that. And just the fact that Microsoft has done so much effort into the gaming space to do this, it kind of makes me wonder how long places like Luna and Stadia will be able to survive when the idea of owning your games is still such a strong presence for people. And Microsoft kind of gives you that opportunity still. As does Steam, as does GeForce, as, you know, so it's kind of interesting.
Whenever you look at, like, Microsoft, and I can have things that are on Game Pass that I get for free, and I just pay the $500 access price of the console to get in, right? Mm-hmm. Versus I have to pay for some streaming controller that's also $100, and then I have to buy the games, and then, you know, I don't even own any of that. Or the worst is I have to buy the games, but I'm dependent on the streaming service, the quality of which may be dubious any given day, depending on the internet weather, right? So,
right.
Yeah. To me, it's just kind of like I would rather pay for the damn console and then have known performance versus the nebulous. I don't know what it's going to be like today.
Well, it's the idea of you have the console to be able to play locally, right? But you have been given the option because you're subscribing to their service to be able to play it remotely. And I think having all of those options is what makes this service from Microsoft so important. Because it's not just you're not just paying for a one trick pony.
Right, and it also enables me to play it on a platform like, well, I want to play Darksiders 3, whatever, that's on Game Pass, but I want to play it on my PC. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to just stream it from the Xbox to the PC because they've removed that functionality for a while. But now I can cloud stream it. So it's like, okay, well, that gives me an opportunity to experiment with the cloud streaming thing, which I actually found to be kind of okay. Although the resolution sucked, because it was like, you know, playing in 720p on a 1440p monitor, so it was a little bit blurry.
Right.
But sure.
But, you know, now that they've added that functionality back in, it makes it a lot easier.
Oh, is it back now? It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Totes.
just very recently. Like,
well, so yeah, there it was, the short lifespan of streaming from the cloud.
Well, there are some other interesting, you know, business models, right, that are available in this space. I was talking a little bit earlier Ubisoft has an all-you-can-eat subscription, Ubisoft Plus, which is $15 a month. It gets you all of their games and all of their DLC, so you get like the ultimate edition of their games.
Yeah, and if you're a day one like adopter, like, oh, I always buy the Assassin's Creed games or whatever, like on day one, it's like, well, yeah, pay the 15 a month, because by the time, you know, you've bought what, like 4 months, that's the price of one game.
Yep.
And yeah.
Yeah, well, and a lot of the Ubisoft Ultimate Editions are over $100 now.
Ooh, gross.
So they're $110, $120 for some of them. So it becomes economical pretty quickly if you're gonna, you know, pay for those games. So what is interesting that Ubisoft has done is they are giving you all these games and you download them to your PC and play them through the Ubisoft client. So, you know, pretty much what you'd expect. But in addition, included in the existing subscription price, so for the same, you know, 15 that you're already paying, you can play any of those games that are in your Ubisoft subscription on Stadia or Amazon Luna for free. Like, you don't have to pay a separate subscription to Luna, for example. Now, my understanding is that that is going away. If that's something that sounds good to you, I gather you have to sign up for Ubisoft Plus now and stay subscribed. Otherwise, you'll lose the free streaming. But, you know, for me, that was an interesting, like, hey, I want to play with Amazon Luna. I bought a controller for Luna so I can, you know, get the better latency that that offers. And I've played, like, Assassin's Creed Syndicate through Luna a couple times. And, I mean, it is very similar to the experience of playing the game on other streaming services I've tried. On Live was the one that you were mentioning.
Yes, On Live, that's the one.
Table for Two, way back when. I had their micro console because I think it was Homefront was a game that came out for PC, and it was $60 to buy it. Or if you got it from OnLive, you bought it through OnLive, and they gave you their micro and controller for free. And I was like, well, okay, you know, I'll give it a shot. And right. OnLive worked, except that it was very clearly the PC version of the game, because all of the in-game tutorials were telling you which letter to push, like F to reload. Well, I'm holding a controller. There's no F button on the controller, and there was no clear way to get documentation on how, you know, how they had mapped buttons. As it turned out, I think you had to hold X for 3 seconds and then it would reload. So, like, I remember the service worked. It would break up. You'd get, you know, the occasional artifacts on the screen. And sometimes if there was a big scene transition, like when a cutscene started or something and the entire screen changed, it would take a few seconds for it to kind of click in and get all the video back. But that was, like you said, what, 10 years ago, 15 years ago now?
Oh, it was like, it was definitely more than 10 years ago, yeah.
And I feel like at least playing Luna or even xCloud, the technology hasn't changed all that much. Like the way I remember OnLive working and working versus what I'm getting today, it feels very similar to me. Now, OnLive was 720p, if I remember correctly, where what we're getting today is at least 1080p, probably a little bit higher bit rate. I know Luna is going to be offering 4K streaming soon. And Stadia offered 4K, but notoriously it was upscaled 4K. So they were taking a 1080p video stream and just calling it 4K effective. So, you know, I'm not sure that really counts. But I don't know. I haven't been blown away by the technology. And I was traveling quite a bit, which would be one, you know, really good use case, I think, for this. But it goes back to what Jim said earlier about internet connectivity, where depending on the hotel, depending on what was going on in the city that week, if there was a convention in town or what, the hotel internet varied from really good to really, really bad. And so I was never willing to trust one of these streaming services. I always brought a Switch, and actually I used to carry an Xbox One with me in a special hard case so I could take it as carry-on baggage on the airplane, because I didn't trust the airline with my console for obvious reasons. But all that to say, like, I don't know. I feel like game streaming has potential, but we haven't seen it quite come together yet. And what I mean, one of the things that Stadia talked about was going to watch a gameplay trailer on YouTube and being able to click a button and within a few seconds be playing the game that you were just watching to experience it for yourself, like a demo. That would be really cool.
Like right there in the browser. Yeah, I mean, that would be really cool, but they've talked about trying to merge their systems, and, you know,
it hasn't happened, right? That was one of the ideas they talked about, but it hasn't happened. And the one that I would really love Microsoft to pull off is, hey, I have the new Call of Duty game that I play, and I just bought it. It's a 200 gigabyte download, which is going to take me a few days. And for whatever reason, I didn't preload it. I want to be able to click on the game and have it say, game's still downloading. Do you want to play on xCloud? Oh, okay. Yeah, let me play on xCloud. And I go and I play the game, and maybe I play for a day. But with Xbox Live, all of my games are synced to the cloud. So there's no reason why I couldn't play the game through xCloud, have my save game or my progress saved on the cloud, and then when the game is ready for me locally, it just transitions either seamlessly or pops up a, you know, please wait, or the next time I launch the game, whatever it is, but like switch me over to the local copy. That has to be possible with what technology Microsoft has today. They just haven't, you know, made it a reality yet, but I gotta think it's coming. And that would be really interesting.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I don't know. I think maybe I'm in the same kind of vein as you, but I feel like it's actually in a place now that makes a lot of sense to me. But also being like a tech head, like maybe I have the least amount of like issues getting it to work properly, because some folks might not be able to do it well. But you know, I've been playing and dealing with the streaming stuff since, you know, for the last couple of years. I mean, ever since Nvidia, you know, started doing their demo stuff with game streaming, I've been remote playing all kinds of stuff, you know, from playing games from my PC, like in home streams, right, playing from my PC to like the Nvidia Shield TV, for example. And so it kind of started with that tech and seeing how well that tech worked. And then, you know, with Steam doing their Steam Link console, you know, and they were doing their Steam OS type idea, to then them with the Steam Link app to be able to do that, to then even, you know, over a VPN with a good internet connection, I went to go visit Alien Pickle, you know, and I was able to play Quake, you know, from my home PC. Now, granted, it wasn't a power intensive game, but, you know, from my home PC over the internet at his house, you know, which was pretty cool. So, I mean, like the home version kits of these things, I feel like tend to be mixed results, because, you know, you have to have solid internet connections on like either end, for example. But the Microsoft tech, more than any of the other companies, has actually just shocked me. You know, especially with the implementation of Microsoft's touch controls, it was just so intuitive. Like playing like Super Lucky's Tale with touch controls was actually very intuitive and done very well. Because usually touch controls are like gimmicky, or they don't, you know, if the touch screen isn't really that good, like, you know, but, you know, playing that or like Minecraft Dungeons with touch controls, that game just feels like it's a mobile game.
Yeah, I can see that. I had a buddy of mine who worked in, lived in Irvine, Southern California, and worked in San Luis Obispo, which was Central California, about 6 hours, 4 hours away. And he had his PlayStation 4 at home, and he would bring his Vita with him to the hotel when he would go up there to work, and would remote play his PS4 games on the Vita. And he said it worked, you know, very consistently for him. Now, obviously, he knew, you know, the hotel. He was staying in the same place all the time and everything. But, you know, it shows that it's possible, right? And that was home, you know, home streaming to his Vita. It wasn't PlayStation Now, which is PlayStation's PS3 streaming service, PS4 download service, confusingly. But I do think, you know, there is that. Those examples of where it works well, I guess my issue going back to my hotel example is just it's not reliable. I don't know if I go to visit, you know, Table for Two's house, if it's actually going to work this time or not. And that makes me really uncomfortable.
Well, for what it's worth, so here's where I'm going to agree with you is that as a reliable only source for your gaming, no, I don't see that as being... Like that, we're not there yet. It's not a reliable source for gaming. But like, you know, in a quick fix or in a pinch, or maybe you just want to like, you know, you're in between meetings or whatever, and you want to like shoot a couple of grunts in Halo or something like that, and you really don't care about your performance. You know, you're just really kind of trying to mess around and play.
Some fun. Yeah.
Or maybe it's a lighter weight game that actually works a little bit better with the streaming, like a Minecraft Dungeons, for example. You know, mm-hmm. Yeah, I was sitting in a meeting just the other day and like, you know, we were shooting the breeze and I was, you know, shooting a couple of skeletons in Minecraft Dungeons. But it was just like, you know, it's not that, you know, it was an easier one to manage. But, you know, it's not going to be for competitive like Twitch shooters for sure. I don't think it ever would be. I mean, we'd have to really advance in our latency of our infrastructure of our internet in this country for it to ever remotely be something like that. But for the casualness of it though, I think it's very there. And the in-home stuff for sure is very good.
I played all of Final Fantasy VII Remake on my PC in-home streaming from my PS4. And the one thing that I did though that was not maybe the standard is I actually used my controller connected to the PC most of the time, but I wanted to use my pro controller, the Xbox Elite 2 controller. But there were certain parts of the game where you had to have tilt controls, which obviously the Xbox controllers don't support. So I would go and use my PS4 controller connected directly to the PS4 to do those parts of the game, and then I would switch back to my Elite controller when I was done. So
I'm so tired of that gimmick. I'm sorry. I really don't like that gimmick at all.
I 100% agree with you, but I'm just saying like it was literally required for parts of the game. So
no. I get you. Yeah. I get you. I just that gimmick just kind of gets me fired up. You know, Salt brought to you by But yes. Because I played the entirety of Mass Effect Andromeda streamed from my PC to my NVIDIA Shield. Played with a 360 controller instead. The button that has the same button layout as like, you know, the newer stuff, but
yeah.
But I didn't have the controller set up for my Shield at the time for that, so. But yeah, no, I played the entirety of Mass Effect Andromeda, and this was when I was living in that, and Jim knows, I lived in this big old house in South Charlotte, and upstairs I had this projector room, it was like our entertainment room, and so 120-inch view screen with a sound system, so that's how I played Mass Effect Andromeda. I still have that projector, but I don't quite have the wall space in this house for that.
Get a sheet and put it in the backyard, shoot it out the kitchen window.
Yeah, there you go, that might be... might be a solution, but
yeah. You know, anyway, I hear what you're saying. Yeah,
and I still
very different. experience.
Right. And I still have that here at the house too, though. I mean, we have a TV upstairs. We have a 4K, you know, 50-inch TV. And I've got my Shield hooked up to that, and occasionally I'll go up there and I'll stream something. It's been mixed. I'll play Skyrim up there every now and then I'll come downstairs a little bit and play Skyrim. But the funny thing about playing Skyrim up there is I'm playing with a controller, and I'm one of those weird wackadoo inverter people with the controls. And so,
as we talked about it on an earlier show, yes. Yeah. God.
But I know I'm an alien. I get it. But I am not from your planet. But when I come back down to my PC, because of the way the controller scheme is set, even when I go back to a mouse, it still has the controls inverted, and I have to go back and like turn the inversion off when I'm using a mouse. So that way I can play like a normal person. So anyway, it's kind of interesting. That was a little... In other words, they don't have saved control layouts for controllers versus keyboard and mouse. They kind of just like remap it to the controller. So, but
yeah, and that's an interesting point, right? We've both touched on this now, where playing, you know, streaming between different systems means that all of a sudden, you have to think about, well, which controller am I using? How does that map to the remote device that I'm playing on? How does the whatever I'm using to connect the two handle that? Can I remap controls and things like that? I think Parsec, if I remember correctly, let you remap controller if you were playing remotely on someone else's system.
Parsec has a really intuitive controller scheme, I feel like. Because it captures the devices rather well. And I actually really like the way Parsec kind of does some of their stuff. Although there are some features that are missing from Parsec that we've talked about before. But, you know, they really could use some HDR support. They really could use, I think there's a couple other little minor tweaks here and there. But
It didn't like my laptop. If you remember having the lid closed, it didn't want to work.
And that's
a couple other oddball things. Yeah. But it was interesting for sure. I just think that we are in a world where the in-home streaming can be used. This technology, right, can be used for other things like the Steam Remote Play or PlayStation. Play with a friend, so you can play a local co-op game with your buddy who is 1,000 miles away playing as player two, even though the game doesn't actually support online. And that way your friend doesn't even have to own the game either, which is really interesting use of that technology. Because you're just streaming the video to them and then they're playing, you know, with their controller.
Yeah, and it's really interesting how Steam has incorporated that, right? Like, that just fascinates me that they've finally, it used to be this whole like bane of, you know, how do we play a remote game together? Well, you used to have to like have third party software. Even Parsec, I think, was part of the reason why the Parsec was invented, was to help fill in that gap. But there's, you know, with the inclusion of stuff now like built directly into Steam. That's pretty cool. But NVIDIA has been testing this kind of technology out even before, you know, Steam and Parsec. I mean, for years they were doing it, and there was a plugin for, it was like an experimental feature in the NVIDIA experience. And you had a plugin for Chrome, and then you would just send a link to your buddy and they would click on it. And they would install the plugin, and then they were like, they could be player two. And so I remember testing this out with Jim many years ago. Like, we were playing Lego Star Wars 3 or something like that at one point. It's pretty cool that kind of technology is slowly but surely becoming more prevalent. You know, the remote play together kind of stuff. So.
Well, and you've got, like, I think where we all are most comfortable is a place where we own the game and then can choose where we want to. That fair to say? I I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, I guess.
I mean, well, say that again. I think you cut out on me.
I was saying we all want to own our games and then play them wherever we want.
Right. Correct.
Which is a little bit different if you think about Netflix, if you think about Spotify, right? We don't buy movies anymore. We don't buy music anymore. We just stream it, and we're all kind of, or many of us at least, are okay with not owning that content anymore because we can get it whenever we want from a streaming service. And right. I wonder if games will ever get there, or the fact that games are interactive is always going to mean that it's going to be a fundamentally different experience because it is a interactive thing where you have to have super low latency in order for the experience to be good. Where if you have really bad latency on Netflix, you just get, you know, a worse picture. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I don't know. Sure. That's where I wonder if games are ever going to be able to be streamed, or if the fact that they're interactive is going to prevent that from happening, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
The interesting thing that I've noticed with streaming tech recently, though, that has been improved upon, I feel like, has been when you get to a certain point where your latency is having issues, instead of it cutting out or like locking up on you, which is what it was like in the first few days, they just, you know, they scale the resolution down for you. And so it'll go pixelated for a little bit, but you don't lose the momentum of the gameplay, I guess, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah.
So
it tries to handle that, but
yeah, and it's gotten better. So
yeah, that's fair. I guess that's just where it'll be interesting to see as the technology develops. It also, you know, one of the use cases for this that has never really panned out is over cellular versus a home, you know, connection. And that's because even 4G LTE, the latency's, you know, 60 to 80 milliseconds, which is added to all the other latency involved in streaming, is a little too much. So I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, if we get, as 5G rolls out and becomes more common, maybe that's low enough latency to pull this off, because playing like in a subway car or on the bus or something like that on my phone, if I was, you know, commuting every day, which I don't anymore, but if I was, that sure would be interesting, right? Because if I used to take the train to work, I would love to be able to sit and play a game on it versus just staring out the window, you know, scrolling on my phone. So I do think there are use cases for the tech. It's just, I don't know if we'll ever get to a point where we don't own our games still. And that's where Microsoft and GeForce Now seem to be kind of ahead of the curve, the way that they're approaching these things.
Yeah, no, for sure. Very, very much so. I do get nervous though, because I really feel for people that have kind of invested in Luna and Stadia from the get-go, because
Well, Luna doesn't let you buy games, to be clear. So all you're investing in is a $3 or $6 a month subscription. And well, you're getting good. A library of games for that price, right?
Right.
Whereas Luna, Stadia is where you actually were buying the games full price, but they only live in the Stadia ecosystem. I mean, you can't take that game license and download the game, for example.
Interesting.
And that's where, like, to me, Luna's strategy makes sense if you aren't worried about owning your games or you just want to play some games casually. You could pay that $6 a month, introductory pricing, obviously, asterisk, asterisk, asterisk. But that at least has an understandable value without you owning your games. But I mentioned before, I bought with OnLive Homefront to get the free console. And when OnLive went away, I just didn't have that game anymore.
Yeah.
It was gone, you know? And so it would be like back in the old days, losing the disc to a game. You know, if you didn't have the CD, you didn't have the game anymore. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. One other aspect, though, that we haven't talked about with streaming services is the ability to have people play on multiple devices at the same time. So Luna, the Ubisoft subscription, when you use it with Luna, you can only play on one device. But with Luna, at least, I know if you buy the $6 a month subscription, you can actually use it on two different devices at the same time.
Interesting.
So that means I can be like in the same game twice?
I don't know about that because I think it's still tied back to some sort of account. So, and that account may be used for multiplayer. I don't know.
Right, but it's like one of your kids could be playing the same game that you are on a different device at the same time.
Exactly. And that is really interesting to me, too, because that makes it, if you're in that situation like I am with three gamer kids and a gamer wife, well, gosh, you know, having two devices at the same time is actually a big plus, potentially. So I don't know what the policy is for other services, whether you are allowed to do multiple devices at the same time or not.
Hmm. Well, it's definitely interesting tech. I mean, I think the company who's doing it the best right now has probably got to be Microsoft. I think they've really just, you know, they've been putting in a huge package of how you play, what you play, where you play, you know, discounts on games for being an Ultimate subscriber, for example, or just a regular Game Pass subscriber. You get discounts depending on what platform. But yeah, it's definitely very, very interesting times that we're living in with these games. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this today was primarily because I was so struck by the fact that you can play EVE Online through a freaking web browser now. You know, yeah. And so I've
been known to describe EVE Online as multiplayer Excel. So it you know, with browser based Excel and Google Sheets being a thing, it doesn't actually surprise me, I guess.
I was gonna say Office 365 EVE Edition or something like that.
Yes, just
like,
exactly. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, you know, all teasing aside, yeah, it is fascinating that you don't need anything but a web browser to play EVE. And it makes sense because they care about the subscription. They don't care how you play.
Right. And yeah, it just kind of increases the footprint on what devices you can play on, which is where I was ultimately going with this, right? Like, I mean, when you can play DOS games through a web browser, it kind of really eliminates the need for, you know, having to go find that DOS game or like keeping the physical discs on hand or something like that. You know, when you can digitally archive this stuff somewhere and then actually go and play it. Now, of course, there's the morality question of like, you know, what is legal there and licensing and all that stuff, but this is more of a conversation about the tech, right? So
yes.
You know, the fact that the tech exists, the fact that you can do all these things is just mind-blowing to me. So
one other thing that I know, again, I'm using Luna because that's the one I'm most familiar with, but one other thing that they're doing that I thought was worth talking about, they have two different subscriptions, and I posted the link in our chat. But basically, For the basic subscription is $6 a month, and that gets you their library of games, things like Control, Metro Exodus, big name games that AAA titles that you to play. But they also have a $3 a month family channel subscription, which gets you E and E10 rated games like SpongeBob SquarePants Battle for Bikini Bottom. That's the one they've been pushing. And this is another use case that I was thinking of that actually kind of makes sense to me, where, you know, if you just want to play games occasionally with your kids, or they're pretty young and they're not really, you know, super into games, but you kind of want to, you know, start exposing them, $3 a month is not bad to just have a handful of kid-friendly games, and all the games you know are friendly based on the rating.
Well, here's
yeah, but what
here's
about the, what about when other... China takes over and they say you're only allowed to play 3 hours a week, and then they actually can throttle you because you're dependent on the cloud?
Well, that's
lesson China. Learned, I guess. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
But the interesting thing that I'm looking here with the family plan that you were talking about is it supports local co-op on select games, and you can play on two devices at a time, which is, you know, if you've got a couple of young kids, that's actually not a bad way to go. And of course, this is supported on like PC, Mac, Fire TV, tablets, Chromebooks, web apps, yep. You know, so
it's just a web app basically, you know, on all these devices. So, and it does work on iPhone, iPad as well.
This
as Android.
Okay. All right. Well, all right. So that's interesting. So hold on a second. So I'm kind of doing this on the fly. So that's Luna. All
right. Right.
So Stadia has a 1 month free promo, and then after that it's $10 a month after the trial, and you can cancel any time. But Luna and you have to there's a select games that are free, but
with that subscription. Right.
With that subscription. But then there's a lot of other games that if you want to play them you have to buy them.
Yeah, and this is where Stadia is super confusing, because they have two very different business models kind of smashed in together. One is the subscription with a library of games that you can play, you know, as part of that subscription price. Then they also have a, you know, retail sales Steam, you know, store like model, where you buy a game for full price and then you can play it as much as you want through Stadia over the wire through the cloud or from the cloud. But you don't need a subscription if you buy the game. Because yeah, by buying the game, you're getting, you know, right, that
and
right.
That's so bizarre to me, because you, in order to play that version of that game, which is in that ecosystem, in a lot of cases, those versions of the games don't quite get the support that the other ones do at the same time. They're usually, like, behind.
Yeah.
We've talked about that on our news segments on several occasions. But I guess the point I'm trying to come here is that's $10 a month just for their select pool of stuff that they have of their library. And then if you want to, you know, actually, without having to subscribe, there's other games you can buy through that service and just play them without a subscription, which is kind of like counterintuitive to this whole model. And then Luna is sitting over here at $6 a month for this early access price, and yet you don't have to buy any other games. But the thing that I'm seeing with Luna is being owned by Amazon is the Twitch integration that's probably going to come from them, and they seem to be a better platform to do it than Google is with YouTube, just saying.
Twitch you can watch streams in Luna, and you can go from watching something on Twitch to playing that game instantly on Luna, how they pitch it. So if you see your favorite streamer playing Control, you can hit a button in Luna and go start playing. And that's kind of cool, right? Like
that's exactly what Stadia was promising that you could do, but you can't.
Right. That was one of the use cases Stadia talked about but never implemented. And here Amazon's done it with Luna and Twitch, at least. It's a neat idea, right? Like I know people who love Twitch as a game discovery service more than anything else, right? Because they can go see somebody playing the game. They can flip between a few different streams and see different parts of the game. Make sure that people who are late in the game are still enjoying it, that they, you know, the game holds up over 20 hours, 30 hours or whatever. So yeah, I mean, I can kind of see that being a cool use case.
That's wild.
You can imagine down the road, they could even stream from Luna directly to Twitch. So you wouldn't have to use your upstream bandwidth to stream.
So just talking about the costs here in general. So there's that. Plus then there's also like the Ubisoft tier of things that you could get to. You can do that for $15 a month. So kind of comparing these services a little bit, then you have the Game Pass service for PC and Xbox. So if you just have the PC version, it's $10, or if you just want the console version, it's $10 for those respectively. But if you want both of them together for Ultimate, it's $15. Plus, on top of that, with getting the Ultimate, not only do you get the benefits of both the console and the PC stuff, but then you get all the xCloud streaming, the remote streaming, the, you know, all of those extra perks, which there's, you know, quite a few, and just all the games that kind of come with that. So the cost comparisons here are actually quite interesting when you look at, like, what's available depending on what you have. I mean, if you're looking at some kind of an entry thing and you don't have a console or really a gaming machine at all, your options are kind of like abundant, really. I mean, you can almost pick and choose from anything. And the way that the Luna stuff is looking, like, it's easy just to like try it and then see if you like it or not. And it's not too terribly expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the one of the appeals that makes sense to me for a service that doesn't have you buying games, right? Mm-hmm. One of the things game developers talk about with Game Pass is they actually do better having been on Game Pass in terms of sales, which seems mm-hmm. weird, right? People can play the game for free. Why are you getting more sales from that? Well, the answer is because it's a time-limited thing. So people buy it before it leaves Game Pass because they started the game and they want to finish. Mm-hmm. The other reason is it's a great way to have a demo, the same way I was talking about Twitch, and you get to experience the game through a streamer and you get to kind of see like, oh, is this something that actually appeals to me? Well, if I can just download it and there's no cost and there's no risk to trying it, then yeah, why not, you know?
Well, and the other thing with Game Pass too is as a subscriber to that, then you also get that the discounts that come with it. Now, the other interesting thing that happened with Game Pass was last year, the way that they were getting a bunch of people in through the door was they were offering Game Pass for $1 for 3 months. So, like, yes. I mean, really, for $1 to get Game Pass Ultimate for $3 or for $1 for 3 months was really, like, you know, it really sold on a lot of people. And I actually got a lot of friends who jumped on that bandwagon and tried it, and they're like, oh, I see what you've been hyped about now that I have a chance to try it for $1. And it's just like, you know, 3 months of this is like, I get so much, you know, so many games that I can play for so cheap. And then they're like $15 a month after that. Hell, that's an MMO subscription right there, you know, or, you know, a subscription to some other service. I mean, but it's like, what kind of value do you put into it, right? Like, if you like to buy maybe one new game a month for $60, you know, anywhere between $20 to $60, depending on the game. I mean, this is cheaper than that, and you get access to so much more. And then kind of the same thing with Luna and Stadia, in a way. I just think these services are going to continue to improve, but I really think the best value of all of it has got to be Microsoft right now. Now, I've learned some things today about Luna, so I have a little bit of greater respect for it, but I've kind of drinking the Microsoft juice there, so that's kind of where my camp is.
I think the Luna is a different approach than Microsoft for sure, but I don't think it's one that is without merit. I just don't think it's for hardcore gamers like people who would buy, you know, Xbox Live.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you guys got any final thoughts on this?
I will say that one of the things being all of us are in the United States that we tend to forget is a lot of this stuff is only available in the United States. A lot of times other countries, particularly Australia, New Zealand, countries in Eastern Europe, don't have access to these services. And it sometimes takes a very long time for them to reach even Western European countries, you know, the UK, France, Germany. And so, you know, in some ways, the U.S. is an experiment, right? We're the guinea pig market for a lot of this stuff. But because our internet is so variable across the country, and there are so many people who can't get access to broadband, I wonder how big the market for these services really is. U.S. only product, essentially.
Well, you can find all of this and more over on our Discord at discord.otherworlds.gg. We've got lots of these kinds of discussions happening all the time. We had a pretty interesting one just the other day in our retro section when we were talking about the fact that you can actually get, RetroArch on Steam now. So they're kind of struck up a conversational debate about that being on Steam. In our retro session, not necessarily like it's a good or bad thing, but like, you know, the interesting fact that there's now, you know, emulators that you can get through Steam, which is kind of interesting. So there's tons of those kinds of conversations that happen all the time over on our Discord. So discord.otherworlds.gg. We're still running our giveaway, 100 for 100. We're going to do some, once we get 100 people on our Discord server, we got some gift cards we're going to give away. Plus, we do have some game servers, Battlefield 4 for now until 2042 comes out. We currently still have the Conan and Unreal Tournament as well as a Minecraft server. So come on by and check things out. We've been playing tons of different games. I'm sure there's always somebody up for something here in our community. So come on by and see what people are playing. Like I said, I'm going to jump into some Star Wars Galaxies Legends today, so if that's something that interests you, stop on by. This has been episode number 37. See you next time.
Yeehaw.